The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What do you love about music? To begin with, everything.
Putting on a great show is the most important thing you can do. One great rock show can change the world.
Welcome to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. I'm Jim DeRogatis, the pop music critic at the Chicago Sun-Times.
And I'm Greg Cott. I write about rock and roll for the Chicago Tribune. Today on the world's only rock and roll talk show, Jim and I welcome up-and-coming Scottish rock band Frightened Rabbit.
Plus, we'll review a soundtrack that's in big contention at the Oscars, Slumdog Millionaire. You're listening to Sound Opinions, and now it's time to welcome our newest affiliates.
Yes, Jim, it is that time, and we have a flood of new affiliates this week to welcome KDLJ in Dillingham, Alaska, Tri-State Public Radio in Macomb, Illinois, and the nine stations of New Jersey Public Radio. Now, normally, we like to play a song that is representative of the areas we're joining, and unfortunately, we can't play songs from all of these areas, so we had to focus on just one this time.
Well, New Jersey wins out because, let's face it, it's got the most muscle, and there's nine stations, okay? And really, New Jersey Public Radio covers the entire state, from Sussex County in the very north all the way down to the tip of Cape May in the south. Now, as a child of Jersey City, New Jersey, I have never been hesitant to play a lot of New Jersey music on this show. I've waxed rhapsodic about the Feelies and the Bongos, some of the bands that were important to me in Hudson County and Hoboken growing up. What are you going to do to welcome the whole state of New Jersey, though? Do you go with Francis Albert? Do we go with Sinatra? Do we go with, like, you know, a little deeper, Connie Francis or Frankie Valli? You know, Blondie came from Jersey. Lauryn Hill was born in Jersey. There's that, you know, what that Springsteen guy and that Bon Jovi guy. No. I was thinking, you know, anywhere in the world, literally, anywhere punks are gathered in more than three or four, you will see a familiar T-shirt. And it is the skull emblem, which, of course, is the logo of the Misfits. A great gift from the state of New Jersey to the punk underground, formed in Lodi, you know, by Glenn Danzig and the boys in the early 80s. This record that I'm going to play, Walk Among Us, was their first full-length album to really get out there. It was recorded in Booton, New Jersey. This song is called Violent World. What other great song title from a bunch of guys in Jersey than Violent World? Here's the Misfits on Sound Opinions.
That's Violent World from The Misfits, and we once again welcome all our newest affiliates. Ah!
That is the song Boilermaker by the Chicago noise band The Jesus Lizard, probably the single group most closely associated with the local label Touch & Go Records. In fact, Touch & Go was gearing up to put out a series of Jesus Lizard reissues. This is a really important record label in the U.S. The news we have today is sad, and it's going to have a huge impact across the United States. Touch & Go will stop distributing some 20 associated indie labels across the United States of America. A lot of the coolest indie labels in the country, Drag City, All Natural, Jade Tree, Merge Records from North Carolina, would come to Touch & Go in Chicago to have their CDs pressed, manufactured, and then distributed to record stores across the country. The company, for more than two decades, has been doing this service and is renowned for its honesty, its handshake deals. Corey Rusk started this company more than 25 years ago as a label to put out bands like the Jesus Lizard and literally hundreds of other classic indie releases. And then branched out more than two decades ago to start helping other labels get their music out there. Mm-hmm. And if you want to know more about it, you know, we profiled them in 2006 on the occasion of their 25th anniversary. That show is in our archives. What is going to happen to these labels in the wake of Touch & Go saying it's not going to provide this service? None of this is quite clear yet, but it's going to have major impact on the American indie music scene.
Yeah, this is devastating news. And we spoke to Corey, in fact, today as we were preparing this news story, and you could clearly see that this was extremely painful for him to have to go through. This is the economic reality of 2009. Everybody's getting pinched, obviously, with the recession, and certainly the independent music scene as well. Clearly, he's going to be shrinking his operation. And what's going to happen to these 20-plus independent labels that have been using Touch & Go distribution and manufacturing, as you pointed out, is even more intriguing and potentially devastating. Can they get their music into retail outlets in a timely manner in order to stay alive, in order to have new product out there?
Yeah, no doubt about it, Greg. It's a sad day for indie music in the U.S., and we're going to have to see how this story shakes out.
That was the Madonna track, 4 Minutes, from her last studio album, Hard Candy. It was one of the reasons that she was the highest revenue-earning artist in 2008. No really big surprise there. What is interesting to note, Jim, is that Hard Candy was only the 50th best-selling album of 2008.
Wow.
She was only 14th in selling digital downloads, and she had no ranking whatsoever in selling ringtones. And yet, she made $240-plus million in 2008, mostly through touring. Another little side note to the reason that Madonna was the highest revenue-earning artist in 2008, $18 million in tour merchandise.
Man, so when that's a lot of T-shirts.
That's a lot of T-shirts, a lot of Madonna trinkets. So when we talk about this Live Nation 360 deal that she did with the major concert promoter, 10 years, $120 million in which Live Nation would share in all the music-related revenue that Madonna brings in, it's starting to make a little sense. If she can bring in $240 million a year by being on the road, that deal's starting to look a little bit better for Live Nation. The question being, what will Madonna be making 10 years from now when she's pushing 60?
All right, that's a good question. Now, this is our last revenue list story of 2008. This is the list that just came out of the top artists who made the most money, period, in all venues, right?
Yeah, in all areas.
All right, so Madonna's number one. Who else is on there?
Combined income, Bon Jovi, a distant second at $150 million. Not that I would call $150 million anything to sneeze at. Springsteen, right behind Bon Jovi, also at about $150 million. The Police with $109 million. And Celine Dion, the youngest performer in this top five, with $99 million made from all sources of revenue in 2008.
You're listening to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. I'm Jim DeRogatis. I'm here with Greg Kot in the Jim and K Maybe Performance Studio. And we are here with one half, two quarters of Frightened Rabbit, Grant and Scott Hutchinson. Welcome, guys, to the show.
Hi. Thank you.
Well, we have this bedraggled touring band here. They're on their third tour of North America since this album came out last year, The Midnight Organ Fight. The second album from the group, and much acclaimed. I would note that they finished in the top 40 of the Village Voice passenger poll.
Yeah, impressive.
The critics agree this is one of the best albums of the year. Better than the Kings of Leon record, better than the Metallica record, better than Beck.
Yeah.
That's according to the critics.
The one we were really pleased about was we beat Death Cab.
Because you had toured with them.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to sending a little email about that.
Next time you guys open for us. So.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now all you need is their album sales and you guys would be set.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a progression for you guys because we have the two of you, Scott and Grant, in acoustic mode here. And it sort of dials it back to 4 or 5 years ago when this band was starting. I mean, it's now a full-blown electric thing live and in concert.
Yeah.
But when you started this band, Scott, it was basically you and that guitar you're holding right now, right?
Not this very one. This is a brand new guitar. But, yeah, a version, you know, very much like this, six strings, same tuning. And, yeah, it was a lone, solitary project, mainly because no one would join me. so it's all due to circumstance, but you know, one member per year since then.
Mm-hmm.
We've been really steadily growing, so who knows, next year another. You have to choose the members wisely, I guess. I started with my brother, well, first mistake, but you know, you're spending a lot of time together, and it's important to get the characters all fitting together.
Well, and you actually came to songwriting fairly late, right, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, I only really started, I started when I was about 18. Prior to that, you know, I was in high school and it was all about shredding and, you know, solos. That's what turned the heads. Following that, I actually kind of made a conscious decision to try to become worse on the guitars so that I could become better at songwriting, because it's not really conducive to stick a long, you know, solo in this kind of, unless you're Bon Jovi, into this tale of heartache and woe. So, it seemed more appropriate to drop the shenanigans with all the soloing.
So you could do some finger tapping for us on that acoustic if you...
Yeah, now we need to...
I told you, I forgot how to do it.
Lame it out.
But, so Grant, when you went to... did you attend any of your brother's solo gigs? What did you think?
Don't know if I did actually. I was still living with our parents at the time.
And the move for both of you was from Selkirk to Glasgow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where is Selkirk? Excuse my ignorance of Scotland.
Oh no, it's excused. It's in the Borders in the south.
It's like 40 miles south of Edinburgh. So yeah, we're talking about like 100 miles from Glasgow, which in Scotland is far. I know that's nothing to you guys. You basically drive that to go and see a concert.
Yeah.
But yeah, to us it seems that it's far enough away that you can forget about your hometown again.
Yeah, but close enough that you can go home to get your laundry done.
And
that's good.
And we now both live in Selkirk again.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, well this sort of rock and roll lifestyle is still not paying off yet.
So the rent is much cheaper there.
Well, exactly.
The food is better, yeah.
Yeah. And mom has the washing machine.
Exactly. The bills are lower.
Well, so you're not in the middle of, you know, that UK scene has famously a very active music press. A lot of London acts gets covered, or the hot town, whether it's Manchester or Liverpool that month. Was it a help or was it a hindrance to be relatively remote in terms of where you started and how you started playing out live?
You know, there is an eye on Glasgow's music scene throughout the UK, but that said, you still have to go play your London show. And that London show, it's a really expensive thing to do when you're just starting out. You know, you have to get the train or bus or whatever. And it's just so much pressure on this one show, and you have maybe two or three industry figures coming by. And it's just, for years, we just couldn't get it right.
We played about 5 London shows before we actually played a good one.
Mm.
Because everyone, as soon as you go down there, it's this. Everyone's telling you it's got to be good. You know, so-and-so's coming, so-and-so's coming. And I'm like, I don't care. These are the people that don't even pay to go to gigs. You know, they get on the guest list. So yeah. You're like, I'd rather that the guy who paid £5 to see us enjoyed it than some guy who's not going to sign us after we play a show that's not very good. So
after those experiences, we stopped caring, and that's when things actually started to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I would, you know, to younger bands in Glasgow and stuff who are all about London and wanting to get down there, you know, you have to do it. But I say, like, don't get too worked up. It's not gonna bring riches and gold. The streets are actually paved with dirt and liquor.
Chewing gum.
Yeah.
And it's not, like, if you do play, like we said, we played some really awful shows, and if you do, that's not going to be your last one. Mm-hmm. You know, Glasgow now is a kind of, like you were saying about which city it is at a certain time in music, and at the moment I think it is Glasgow. Mm-hmm. People are really, like, the bands there are turning heads all around the country.
Only a matter of time before Glasgow and Frightened Rabbit conquer the world, I guess, huh? It's exactly, your turn. Yeah. Well, let's hear some music, guys, before we continue the conversation.
Sure. This song's called Poke.
Poke at my iris. Why can't I cry about this? Maybe there is something that you know that I don't. We adopt brand new language, communicate through pursed lips, and you try not to put on any sexy clothes or graces. I might never catch a mouse and present it in my mouth to make you feel you're with someone who deserves to be with you. But there's one thing we've got going, and it's the only thing worth knowing. It's got lots to do with magnets and the pull of the moon. Why won't our love keel over as it chokes on a bone? And we can mourn its passing and then bury it in snow. Or should we kick its head in, watch as it dies from bleeding? If you don't want to be with me, just say and I will go. Our partners, this is a progressive dance, but remember it was me who dragged you up through the sweaty floor. Well, this has been a real, and I've got shin splints and a stitch from wee, but like a drunken night, it's the best bits that are colored in. You should look through some old photos. I adored you in every one of those. If someone took a picture of us now, they'd need to be told that we had ever clung and tied. And maybe not with arms at night. I'd say she was his sister, but she doesn't have his nose. And now we're unrelated and rid of all the bits we hated. But I hate when I feel like this, and I never hated you.
That was Poke, performed by Frightened Rabbit live on Sound Opinions. We're going to continue our discussions with group members Scott and Grant Hutchinson in a minute on Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. And then later on, we're going to review the latest release from Morrissey.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. We're continuing our conversation with Scott and Grant Hutchinson, half of the Scottish quartet Frightened Rabbit. Earlier in the show, we heard singer and guitarist Scott perform the song Poke live in our Jim and K. Mabey studio. I wanted to ask them about writing such personal material. A gorgeous song, Poke, and obviously, Scott, a touching tale of heartbreak. Mm. I know you've told this story a lot, but much of the Midnight Organ Fight is about the end of a relationship.
Sure, absolutely.
She left you with something memorable. This set of songs.
Yeah, souvenir to the world.
Well, I love that image of the cat with the mouse in its
mouth.
Were you worried at any point about sharing too much of yourself in these songs?
It was a funny thing. I mean, when I was writing the songs, Frightened Rabbit didn't have much of an audience at all. So there was very little awareness that people would be hearing it. I was, you know, locked up in my room. Not actually literally locked up. That would have made it on the news. But I was alone, and it was a solitary experience writing and demoing. And just the lack of awareness and the lack of inhibition allowed me to do that. Nothing else. I mean, I'm a naturally shy, kind of retiring guy, which is weird for a singer, I guess. But it was only when it came out that I thought, oh, hang on. There's a lot there. But I think people have come to appreciate the honesty, I guess. And hopefully, you know, it's not too selfish a kind of document in that it's kind of relatable, I hope, you know, rather than being like a big old Dear Diary splurge.
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's anyone who hasn't had that experience of looking at that photograph and wondering, who was that person that I was so close to?
Right.
Right.
Well, this is it. I know. And It Is a Well-Trodden Path is the heartbreak song. So hopefully, you know, I tried to put some slightly new slants on that particular kind of genre.
Well, that's interesting you bring that up, because I think that it is absolutely true that that's a long tradition.
Mm.
And, I mean, we had, you know, one of the biggest pop stars in the universe in the last year put out 808s and Heartbreak, you know, and now
right.
I'm totally devoted to that subject about a breakup with a long-term relationship. You know, you go back to something like Sister Lovers by Big Star. I mean, this is a big theme in music, and it's wrenching. Mm. So when you start down this path, how do you say to yourself, well, geez, there's a really amazing tradition of this stuff, Blood on the Tracks by Bob Dylan. How do you live up to a standard, you know, of that? You know, do you think about that?
Well, I tried not to think about it. It was actually only recently I was doing an interview in Boston, and I only just realized perhaps that's why some of the imagery is perhaps quite unique and quite my own, is that it's been done a million times before. So in a sense, if I was to write about a completely new or less well-trodden path or subject, then I might not be moved to express myself in a different way, I guess. I didn't think I was stepping into any kind of genre or timeline, and it was really just because it was the most important thing that was happening to me at the time. I think that's why everyone does it,
mm-hmm.
and because I can't think about anything else, and I can't write about anything else because it's actually all I can think about.
Did it help?
I don't even know. The pounding of the songs on tour may have actually helped, you know.
Mm.
It's deadened. Also, it was 2.5 years ago, so we're talking in general terms. People get over stuff, but it was less a therapy than more a kind of a cutting off of that particular period and framing it almost in this album.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a question better directed to Grant.
Yeah,
Greg. You know, after he wrote these songs, was he less of a mope?
But Grant, when you hear a song like that, or you know, the Modern Leper, at that point, did you actually have a consoling bone in your body and say, "Gee, is everything okay, Scott?"
Well, I mean, no, I think it was Floating in the Fourth. It's a song that Scott basically discussing with himself whether he should jump off the Forth Road Bridge in Edinburgh or not. That was the one that kind of got me thinking, oh, maybe he needs some help or something.
So you just step out of the front of my house and I'll never see you again. I closed my eyes for a second and when they opened you weren't there. And the door shut, I was vacuum packed, shrink wrapped out of air. And the spine collapsed and the eyes rolled back to stare at my starving brain. And fully clothed, I
Scott's not a person that generally would just sit down with someone and discuss that. I mean, I don't want to say like a normal person, but
yeah, that's kind of the way it is. And the person broadcasts it to the entire world.
Yeah, instead of talking to his brother. Yeah,
yeah.
But no,
sorry
about it
that.
Was.
I should have told you.
I mean, the point is that obviously, being Scott and I are close, and our older brother the same as well, and we all went through this experience with him. And we didn't really talk about it. That was what he did, was wrote these songs to kind of tell everybody rather than just the one person. But definitely now he's a much happier person. This year's been really good to all of us, and I think playing those songs maybe over, 200 times this year?
I was closing in on it, I guess.
Maybe takes the sort of the rawness away slightly from the actual literal meaning of them anyway.
Well, and we should note that you have a new relationship, but she has promised to dump you on occasion to make you
give
you inspiration.
I've discussed this with Greg already.
Set out at the start.
Does the ex, just curious, to turn the tables a little bit from her standpoint, I'm wondering if this is the kind of thing she would have said, well, I wish you'd said this to me directly when we were in this relationship rather than waiting to put it on this record.
That might have helped. But
then the album wouldn't have been as good.
So. Yeah.
This is it. It would have been empty. An instrumental piece.
Yep. And have you talked to her at all about the feelings that she might have toward this record?
Yeah, I have. She once told me that sometimes she just pretends that it's not me and it's just this kind of cool band called Frightened Rabbit that she's into. And then other times it's just like, oh, gosh, this is a little bit full on. So, I think she's able to maybe remove herself from the equation from time to time. And there really was no argument about the details because it is all true, and I haven't made stuff up, and I think I've been faithful to the arc of that particular relationship, and hopefully, rather than making people feel uncomfortable with too much information, I think it's nice that the people I've met anyway have said that they're kind of like able to step into the songs and become that character, and when we play live now, there's this feeling of, you know, these people are lost in their own story when we're playing, and it's less about me anymore, which is great.
So this album is their therapy now.
Yeah, it's passed on. It's
instead of yours.
Our shows are just full of couches.
Why don't you give us another song?
I will. I'm going to play The Modern Leper.
Amongst you all, you tired human beings, and he's got all things a cripple has, not two working arms and legs, and fight apart far from his system and dissolve in Scottish rain. And vitally he doesn't miss him, he's too messed up to care. Like you in front of me, coming back for even more, I'm exactly the same. You must be a masochist. You love a modern leper on his last leg, on his last. I've crippled your heart 100 times, I still can't work out why. You see, I've got this disease that I can't shake, and I'm just rattling through life. Oh, this is how we do things now. Yeah, this is how the modern state's scared. So I cut out all the good stuff. Well, I cut off my food despite my legs. Are you in front of me? Coming back for even more, be exactly the same. You must be a masochist. Love a modern leper in his last leg. I am ill, I'm not dead. I don't know which of those I'd prefer, because that limb which I have lost, it was the only thing holding me up. Walking through the only door. Ooh, I have lost my eyesight like I said I would, but I still know it dies you in front of me, and you and back for even more of exactly the same. Who are you? My suitcase. You love a modern rapper and his last leg. No ill, and I'm not dead. Doesn't that make us the perfect pair? You should sit with me, and we'll start again. And you can tell me all about what you did today, what you did today.
Wow. That is the lead-off track from the latest album from Frightened Rabbit, The Midnight Organ Fight. The name of the song is The Modern Leper. You must have known that you struck gold when you wrote that song, because that was like a punch. When you hear this album and you put that song and that's the first thing that hits you, you go, wow.
Yeah, I did, actually, yeah. You're right. It's really there's no point in saying otherwise.
Well, it was debated as to what should go on the album first as well.
Yeah.
By the label, and we were just like, that's the album in a song.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know, the guy we worked with on the record, Peter Katus, he's worked with some big bands, and we were this relatively unknown band.
Oh, he's done Interpol, he's done the National, right?
Right. So we were kind of like, we could turn up at the studio. And he's like, he can get this impression that he's like, who are these guys? Who are they?
They should be at home playing on a mini disc.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, we had brought the demos, which were obviously fairly rough. We'd done them in my flat. But
his head turned was when he heard that song.
Yeah.
And he was like, okay, all right. And then things just got better from there. And then, you know, now like he's a real big champion of the band, and that was a real turning point, and it was a real setup for the rest of the writing and where that was going to go, because I knew it was like kind of just tapping a well, and then it gushed out, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you so much, Scott, Grant, everybody in the band, for coming by.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Comment on our conversation with the members of Frightened Rabbit or anything else in the rock universe, call our hotline, 888-859-1800. Jim and I will be back after a short break on Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media with reviews and my Desert Island Jukebox pick.
I'm working on my backwards walk, walking with no shoes or socks, and the time rewinds to the end of May. I wish we'd never met that man today. I'm working on my faults and cracks, filling in the blanks and gaps. And when I write them out, they don't make sense. I need you to pencil in the rest. I'm working on drawing a straight line, and I'll draw until I get one.
आजा आजा जिंद शामी आने के तले है आजा जरी वाले नीले आसमाने के तले है जय हो जय हो।
Welcome back to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. What you're listening to is a song called Jai Ho from the Slumdog Millionaire movie soundtrack. It is the song that plays over the closing credits. You see a lot of young ghetto kids from Mumbai dancing on a train platform while this music blasts out of the speakers, and inevitably, people aren't filtering out in the movie theater when this song is playing. They sit riveted in their seats because it's such a compelling moment to close this film. Slumdog Millionaire, of course, nominated for 10 Academy Awards this weekend. By the time some of you listen to this show, we'll know how many it's actually won. It is also nominated in 3 of the music categories, Best Score and 2 entries in the Best Song category for an Oscar. The composer of much of this music is a man named A.R. Rahman. He is a 43-year-old composer from India who has sold 200 million records around the world. Although not really well known in the West, that all may change with Slumdog Millionaire. There's a soundtrack for this movie that is out now. We're going to review it in a second. Let's listen to a piece of music from it, composed by A.R. Rahman. It's called Mausam and Escape on Sound Opinions.
That is the song Mausam and Escape by A.R. Rahman from the Slumdog Millionaire soundtrack. Actually came out in December, Greg, on Interscope, but it's been building steadily ever since that release, especially as we got closer to Oscar hype. It did win Best Soundtrack at the Golden Globes. Rahman is being discovered in a big way. And in fact, the many critics who are writing about him are heaping praise, the likes of which you haven't seen on anybody in a long time. He's either Bernard Herrmann, the great soundtrack scorer who worked with Alfred Hitchcock, or he is Andrew Lloyd Webber. Lloyd Webber himself stepped forward and said, I don't think Rahman is actually me. I think he's Paul McCartney coming from India and doing these soundtracks. He scored more than 100 movies for Bollywood. Here he's working with Danny Boyle, who had an excellent use of music in the film Trainspotting. People keep saying the album stands on its own as an album. It's a great album. That's why we decided to review it. I would disagree. The first half is undeniably an invigorating and intoxicating mix of everything from acid rock guitar to the classic Indian sitar drone, African drumming, techno, and hip-hop. It's a really giddy buzz. But it starts to drag in the second half. I don't like that song, Jai Ho. You know, it's got a little bit of too much of like high school musical rah-rah cheerleading. And even worse is the song that precedes it at the end of the record, Dreams on Fire, which Celine Dion would be embarrassed to record. It is such a schlocky ballad. So, you know, Rahman is a giant, no doubt about it, but not everything he does is as great as people are saying.
Well, the Bollywood aesthetic is very much this melodramatic formula. Huge orchestrations, lots of strings, with incredibly ripe vocals over the top.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dreams on Fire is an example of that kind of singing, and it is pretty hard to take. But Jai Ho works for me because I love what he does with a number of these songs here. There's that heavy tribal drumming underneath it. He's also working a lot with classical orchestration, raga rock, as you were saying, a lot of sitars filtering through here, but also a lot of modern elements like techno and electronic dance music. I think it's a heady mix. Not all of it works, but I think as an introduction to Rahman's music, it works very well. The collaborations with MIA are pretty exquisite. Osaya, one of his first collaborations with MIA, works really well.
That's a keeper.
You've also got a reprise of her worldwide hit, Paper Planes, on this record as well.
Two versions of it, two different mixes, but that's been kicking around since 2007 from her Kala record.
Nonetheless, I would say that this is a buy-it record for me, Jim, because I think it is the best introduction to a guy who sold 200 million records around the world.
I have to disagree, Greg. I've heard better Bollywood, I think, on the buy-it, burn-it, trash-it scale. This is a burn-it. Something is squeezing my skull, Stephen Patrick Morrissey tells us on that song from his new album, Years of Refusal, here on Sound Opinions. Greg, it's been a couple of years since Ringleader of the Tormentors, the last proper Maz studio album, and he was in an odd mood then. Friends I have who are giant Morrissey fans swore that he was no longer celibate. And indeed, the line that everyone quoted, you know, there are explosive kegs between my legs, he was singing when last we heard from him. At that point, he was working with Tony Visconti, the famous producer of David Bowie and T-Rex during the glam era. Now he's back with someone that he worked with earlier, producer Jerry Finn, who helmed You Are the Quarry in 2004. It was a good match then. They decided to come back together with much of Morrissey's regular side band, Boz Boerer on guitar and Matt Walker on drums. Tragic footnote, not long after they completed the album, Finn died of a cerebral hemorrhage at 39. So Morrissey fans are saying huge return to form by their hero. Let's play a little of this, then we'll give our opinion on the, I believe it's the ninth proper studio album from Stephen Patrick. Here's a song called All You Need Is Me on Sound Opinions. You hear sound groan and you constantly moan, but you don't ever go away. And that's because all you need is me. You roll your eyes up to the skies, mock her fight, but you're still here. All you need is me. There's so much destruction.
There's so much destruction all over the world, and all you can do is complain about me. I was a small fat child in a welfare house. There was only one thing I ever dreamed about. Fate has just handed it to me.
That's All You Need Is Me from the new Morrissey record, Years of Refusal, on Sound Opinions. There should be a note on the album cover, Jim. I think we now return you to our regularly scheduled programming. what the heck was Morrissey so happy about a few years ago? Everybody was wondering, what has he done? What is he doing? He's back to being miserable again, and I think people will embrace the miserablest inside Mr. Morrissey.
Yes.
He is telling us right up front from the very first song exactly where his head is at. I know by now you think I should have straightened myself out. Thank you. Drop dead. You know, talk about laying it out. I'm back to being a miserable mope. I hate the world. I hate humanity. Morrissey can get a little wearying when he does that. However, Jim, I think he's back in the same headspace that Nick Cave was around the time that he was turning 50 as well. The sort of midlife crisis, railing against the world and coming back with some of the most aggressive rock music of his career.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one of the heaviest, hardest-hitting records he's ever made. Talk about raging against the dying of the light. I mean, this is a midlife crisis album in some ways. It's like, you know, my life's never going to get any better, and here it is. I'm going to just shove it right down your throat, you know?
Yeah.
So I admire the aggression here. The quips aren't quite as free-flowing as in the past. I think when he does get so cynical, it becomes almost hard to take, you know, unless there's a really good joke behind it. But the music is some of the best and hardest hitting that he's created in his solo career. And for that reason, I'd give this a buy it.
I have to say it is a buy it. The Morrissey faithful are debating only whether it's his best album since The Smiths or his best album since Vauxhall and I in 1994. That's a little hyperbolic. It's not beginning to end perfect. There's some pseudo mariachi nonsense on When I Last Spoke to Carol. That doesn't work. But you're right. Morrissey's back. He's miserable. Thank goodness. I say buy it.
I tell you, little buddy, this whole island is bewitched.
You remember, we were shipwrecked together.
As often as possible here on Sound Opinions, Greg or I like to take a trip to the desert island and drop a quarter in the jukebox there. Mr. Cott, it's your turn. Give us a tune.
Thank you, Jim. We're a little Brit heavy on today's show, and I want to continue the trend. Fleetwood Mac is back on tour, one of your favorite bands, I know. And it's interesting to me because I think people sort of start the Fleetwood Mac history in the mid-70s when Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks joined that band. But I think the band's greatest and grandest incarnation was its very first one, when it was known as Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac. Mm. Who the heck was Peter Green? Well, he was only, I think, the best of the blues guitarists on the British blues scene. And I take that information from a very reliable source, Eric Clapton. I once interviewed him about his rivals on that British blues scene. What about Page? What about Beck? What about all these other great guitarists? He said, no, Peter Green, he was the one. He was the one that everyone was looking at. A very intense style of blues in which he was absorbing a lot of what was coming out of Chicago, the hardest hitting guitarists out of Chicago, Buddy Guy, Otis Rush, Magic Sam, incorporating them into his songwriting and bringing that sensibility into Fleetwood Mac. A pop side, melodies, but at the same time, this very intense, dark side of the music, which was exacerbated by his heavy use of LSD. In fact, Peter Green went crazy for a while, dropped out of the music business for 10 years. And his goodbye note to the band and to the music business was the song I'm going to play next. A brilliant mix of Chicago blues, that sinister hellhound on my trail vibe, combined with psychedelia, a vision at night where he was dreaming. He saw this green monster, this green dog beckoning to him, saying, get out before it's too late. He called it the green Monolishi with a two-pronged crown, and sowed the seeds for heavy metal, I think. You can hear the heaviness in those guitars of Peter Green and Danny Kirwan here. Here it is on Sound Opinions. We'll be right back.
when the day goes to sleep and the full moon looks. The night is so black that the darkness cooks. You come creeping around, making me do things I don't wanna do. That you need my love so bad. Come sneaking around, trying to drive me mad. Busting in on my dreams, making me see things I don't want to see. You're the green minor league sheep with a two-pronged crown. All my trying is up, all you're bringing is down. Just taking my love and slipping away, leaving me here just trying to keep from following.
Greg Kot's Desert Island Jukebox pick, Fleetwood Mac's The Green Monolishi with the two-prong crowd. Got to say, I prefer Judas Priest's version, but you were cool there. What do we have on the show next week?
And don't forget the Melvins version, too. That was very good. But I think the original still rules, Jim. Next week, we have a great performer live in the studio for an interview and a performance, Nico Case.
As always, Sound Opinions was produced by our ace team of Todd Bachman, Jason Saldana, and Robin Lynn. While our executive producer, our fearless leader, a major soundtrack fan, is Tori Southside Malatia, but he was rooting for WALL-E to win in the Oscars.
Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. So give us a call on our hotline, 1-888-859-1800.
I'm calling you. I'm calling you. Can you explain what you want to do?
New messages.
Hi, Jim and Greg. My name is John. I'm calling from Cincinnati, Ohio, and I wanted to say thanks for a great show this past week. Really appreciate the reporting that you've been doing on the Clear Channel, Live Nation, Ticketmaster, impending doom. One thing that hasn't been talked about that much is what this does for the independent promoter. If Live Nation and Ticketmaster end up being the same entity, and I'm the independent promoter selling my tickets, there's a real data mining risk here of Live Nation being able to look at the financial ticket sales records and historical data of their competitors and use that to drive some more people out of business. So I think the Justice Department really needs to take a good hard look at this and hopefully become naysayers of this deal, because I think it could be one of the final coffin nails in the affordability for the average Joe like me to go see a live show. Thanks for all that you do. Keep up the good work.
Hi, this is Amy. I'm calling from the Chicago Burbs. And I just wanted to add to the unconventional love song list Tonight by Iggy Pop, not the David Bowie version.
I saw my baby. She was turning blue. Oh, I knew that soon her young life was through. And so I got down on my knees, down by her bed. Hit these old words. To her I said.
Iggy Pop singing to his love as she's dying from a heroin overdose. It's romantic in a unconventional way, kind of disturbing, dark way. And that's about it. Love the show, guys. Keep it up. Thank you.
Everything will be all right tonight.
Hi, my name is Alex Brunner. I live in Seattle. I'm calling in response to your question about unconventional love songs. And my suggestion is Soul Crusher Mountain by Jonathan Coulton. And it's a love song from the character Skeletor in He-Man to some poor anonymous woman who he's taken a liking to. And he says, the voices inside my head tell me I shouldn't kill you. And, well, you get the idea. Anyway, that's my suggestion. Have a good day.
Welcome to my secret lair on Skull Crusher Mountain. Hope that you've enjoyed your stay so far. I see you met my assistant Scarface. His appearance is quite disturbing. I assure you he's harmless enough. He's a sweetheart, calls me master. And he has a way of finding pretty things and bringing them to me.
Thank you so much for including Will to Love, the love song to a salmon by Neil Young, in your offbeat Valentine song. That absolutely made my day.
Like an ocean fish, we swam up the stream through nets by hooks and hungry bears.
In my early 20s, I transcribed the lyrics to that entire song and included it in a letter, a love letter to a college friend. Needless to say, I got no reply to that letter, but I'm grateful that someone other than me has acknowledged the romance in that song. So thank you again from the bottom of my fishy heart. My name is Lisa Klobuchar, and thank you.
No more messages.
To give us your opinion on Sound Opinions, call our hotline, 1-888-859-1800. We'll be back next week with Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media.